Good morning. As always, it's good to be here. Shelley said, it's been a while since you've been down here. I said, yeah, I think December was the last time I was here. So it's always good to be back down here with you folks. I've got a pretty long reading that I'm going to begin with. They'll all be up on the slides, but if you want to follow along yourself, I'm going to be in Matthew chapter 25 this morning. I'm going to read verses 14 through 30. For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also who had the 2 talents came forward saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also who had received the 1 talent came forward saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours. But his master answered him, You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown, and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So here in Matthew chapter 25, we see a story of a man going away on a journey, and he's entrusting some of his property, in this case with these 3 servants that we're told. When he comes back, 2 of these servants hear a phrase that I think each one of us would love to be able to hear. They were told, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will give you more to entrust and do that. And then he says, enter into the joy of your master. I think that's all we hope to hear at the end of our life. We hear to have that. But we need to notice what the master does not say. He doesn't say, well done, successful servant. He doesn't say, well done, talented servant. He doesn't even go on and say, well done, popular servant. No, he says, good and faithful. Well done, good and faithful servant. And so these 2 words, good and faithful, really carry a lot of emphasis here. And it's something that we need to focus on and have a good understanding of what those requirements for this is. And so on Judgment Day, the highest praise we could ever hope to hear are these words. And so this morning I want to ask us a very practical question. What does make a servant good and faithful? If we want to hear those words on the Day of Judgment, well then we have to understand what is required to be able to meet the standards for that. And so here in this parable of the talents, the Lord has given us a really good picture of what that means. So we'll look at 3 truths to see exactly what we need to know in order to be found good and faithful in the end. Well, first, a good and faithful servant has a character that pleases the master. When Jesus says good in the phrase, he's not talking about outward success or impressive results. He's talking about the kind of person, the kind of character that pleases the master. And we, from that, we can take that character matters deeply to the Lord. In Brad's class this morning, he mentioned a verse that he who is exalted will be humbled and who is humbled will be exalted. And he made the point that humility is something that the Lord wants. Well, that's a character that we should have in our lives, humility. And so that's the type of thing we need to be thinking about. In the 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 7, the Lord told Samuel when he was selecting the next king of Israel, and that it was going to be a son of Jesse. We see this in verse 7. Do not look upon his appearance. There you go. Do not look upon his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. The Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. Here, this is after Samuel had seen one of Jesse's older sons and thought, surely this must be the one. But no, here in verse 7, he goes, you need to look beyond what they look like. And he says, you're not capable of that, but the Lord is capable of knowing the characters of the character of each person. And so from the very beginning, God has always cared more about what we are on the inside than what we look like or what we're able to achieve in our life. That is what we need to take away from this. Think about what it really means to be good then in the Master's eyes. It means our hearts are genuinely oriented towards him and are dedicated towards him. It means we love what he loves. And maybe even more importantly, it means we hate what the master hates. It means we're honest, even when it might cost us. It means that we are humble when we want to be exalting ourselves and telling everybody about something we've done. And it really requires us to be sincere in every aspect of our life as we have this walk with the Lord. And so a good servant does not serve to be seen by others or to seek attention from the master. No, he serves because his main purpose, his prime directive, is to serve and please the master and to do it sincerely. Jesus himself is the perfect example of the kind of goodness that we should be trying to attain. Right after Jesus was baptized in Matthew chapter 3, we're told that the Father's voice from heaven came down and said, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased." Now, notice these words had been spoken about Jesus before he had done his first miracle, before he had raised anyone from the dead, even really before he had started to begin his earthly ministry in earnest. This was said from the very, very beginning. And so we should take away from that why the Lord was pleased with his son. Well, it was because of Jesus' character. Everything about him, his obedience, his humility, his complete love for the Father and his dedication towards him, and the fact that he was willing to go to the cross in order to fulfill God's will, that's the character in which Jesus pleased his Father, and which in Matthew chapter 3, we see that represented. So on Judgment Day, the Master is going to look at the kind of people we've become. Were we honest when no one was watching? Were we kind when it was difficult to be so, when peer pressure would have normally led us to be cruel to someone? Did we stand up and have that kindness? Were we humble when we could have taken credit for some task or some duty that we fulfill? Did we love the things that God loves and hate the things that he hates? Did we walk with integrity, especially when it was inconvenient to do so? We all can walk with integrity here in this building. It's tomorrow morning at work or at school, wherever you may be. That's when it's a little more difficult to walk with sincerity and integrity. That's why Proverbs chapter 23, verse 26 says, "My son, give me your heart." The Lord wants our hearts more than anything else. And if our hearts are attuned to him and our hearts are dedicated to him, well, then the character will follow along because we're going to be doing things that want to please the master. Our words will become more gracious. Our attitudes will be more Christ-like. Our decisions will be a reflection of the standards that we have based upon his word in our lives. So a good servant, I want to make sure you all understand, is not perfect. Servants will stumble, but a good servant's heart is turned towards the master, and we always should be trying to please him. Even though we may stumble and fall short, that should be our goal. That inner desire to please God is what makes a servant good in the eyes of the master. Now, second, a good and faithful servant practices consistent obedience over time. I just mentioned, yes, we can fall, we can stumble, but it's getting right back up and trying to do better the next time is what we are concerned about. The master did not say, well done, brilliant servant, or gifted servant. No, it was well done, faithful servant. So faithfulness is about doing what is right again and again, even when it's ordinary, even when no one is watching. And maybe the most difficult is when it's hard. When being faithful goes against every ounce of of intention in your body, which you would normally do, that's when being faithful really counts. So let's look carefully at the two servants that the Lord called faithful here in this parable. When they were given the talents, they went right away. They didn't say, oh, I know he's going to be gone a while, I've got plenty of time to do something with this. No, they sensed some urgency. They went at once and put the talents to work. They didn't wait for, I'll do something on the weekend, or, it's raining today, I'm not going to go do that. No, they didn't wait. They immediately went to work and kept at it until the master returned. And so that steady, consistent effort is the picture of faithfulness that we get from this parable. Jesus highlighted the same quality of this in Luke chapter 16, verse 10, when he said, "One who is faithful in very little is also faithful in much." So faithfulness is not measured by the size of the task or the result of the task. It's measured by whether we can be trusted with what it is that we are given. And so if we can't be trusted with something small, well, the Lord will not give us something larger until we can prove that we can handle something smaller and move on from there. The servant who is faithful with five talents and the servant who was faithful with two talents, even though they were given different amounts and they returned different amounts, they both received the same commendation, the good and faithful designation. They both were faithful with what it was they had been given. So it's not important about what we are given, but it's what's important that we do something with it. So think about what this kind of faithfulness could look like in our lives. It means showing up to worship when we're tired or discouraged or maybe a little bit under the weather, but we get up and we go because we know that's what the Lord wants us to do. It means keeping your word, especially when lying would work out better for you, but telling the truth might cost you a friendship or a job opportunity, whatever the case may be. That's what we need to focus on, keeping your word even when it might not work out for us. It means continuing to pray and read the scriptures even when you don't feel like it. I mentioned to Brad that at the first of the year, I've been reading through the Old Testament. And sometimes at the end of the day, I'm like, I'm just really tired, I want to go to bed. And sometimes I'm finishing those passages with my eyes blinked, closing. But I've never just said, you know what, I'll do this tomorrow. I've kept at it, and I've continued to do that. And maybe the one that we really would focus on, the faithfulness that we need, is forgiving others when we really don't feel like doing that. But we know that that is what we are called to do. We are to forgive others so that we ourselves can be forgiven. And so these are all things of faithfulness, that these are daily choices to do what God expects us to do, especially when it goes against human nature and it's not what we would normally do ourselves. The third servant in this parable failed at this point. He was afraid, so he buried his talent in the ground. He did nothing with what the master had given him, and he said this was because he knew the master was a hard man. But the master called him wicked and lazy and gave him, he was given something and got nothing back in return for it. He was not condemned for failing to double the talent. He was condemned for doing nothing at all. It wasn't, if he had tried and he had failed, I don't think he would have been given such a harsh reaction from the master. But the fact that he didn't even try, that's what got the master angry with him. And on the judgment day, Our master will not be looking for spectacular moments. He'll be looking for a lifetime of steady, obedient service to him. And that is what makes a faithful servant. Third, a good and faithful servant receives greater responsibility and enters into the joy of the master. That's the third thing we can take from this. When the master says to the faithful servants, "You have been faithful over a little, I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." Faithfulness is never going to be wasted. It's never going to be overlooked by the Lord. It's not going to be something that will slip by him and he didn't see you being faithful. That's not what we can take away from there. Faithfulness is recognized, and faithfulness will lead to more opportunity. It'll lead to more responsibility. It'll lead to better and bigger things for us to be faithful to him and spread his word for him. This greater responsibility that we have to look at. The master doesn't say, you did great. You turned that five talents into another five. Go take some rest. You know, you've done enough. That's not what we've seen here. He says, I will put you in charge of many things. I've got more work for you to do. He doesn't reward him with nothing to do. He rewards him with more to do. Faithfulness in small things prepares us for greater things within the kingdom. And so we need to be looking for ways that we can prove our trustworthiness now so the Lord can entrust us later in life and also entrust us to join him for all eternity. Second, and even maybe even more wonderful, it leads to sharing in the master's joy. It says, enter into the joy of your master. This is not just a pat on the back and great job, keep doing what you're doing. No, he's being welcomed into the joy that comes from serving the master and being faithful to him. So we need to think about that just for a little bit. On Judgment Day, we're told that some will hear, depart from me, I knew you not. Even though they had done some things, they weren't all the way satisfactory to him. But the faithful are going to hear, come, enter into the joy of the master. That joy is the goal for every one of us here today. That should be everything to us, and we should be working and striving towards that. It's the whole reason for us to strive to be good and to be faithful while we serve him. It's the reason we should guard our hearts, that we should obey consistently and keep going, even when challenges are bringing us down. So, what does all of this mean for us today? It means we do not have to be the most talented person. It doesn't mean we have to be the most visible person. We simply need to work and do the things that are required and it would mean that we would be called good and faithful on the day of judgment. We need hearts that please the master and lives that are obedient and not only that the Lord can notice, but others around us could notice as well. If we live that one day, we'll hear the words we long for. Well done, good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of your master. So we should pray that God would make each of us that kind of a servant, good in character, desiring to be obedient, and ready to hear those words when the master returns. Now, normally I'd end there, and that'd be a pretty short sermon, but I told you all of this because I've got a story that I want to share with you. There's a guy on YouTube that I like to watch a lot, and he is a former American Airlines 777 pilot, so he flew the real big jets. And he has a YouTube channel called Captain Steve. Now, that's Steve with three E's if you want to look him up. But he does videos where he'll answer questions that people have about aviation, and if there's a crash or some event in aviation, he'll produce a video talking about maybe why something happened and something like that. And I really love aviation. I'm flying tomorrow, and I told my boss, I said, I love airports. I love being on planes. And so I like his channel. And he didn't start out as a full-time YouTuber. I found a video that he created 15 years ago And they had really nothing to do with answering questions or talking about current events. And that's the video that I want to talk to you about this morning. His name is Steve Schreiber. And his first video that he published that 15 years ago was about his experience on 9/11, 2001. His experience, I think you'll agree when you hear about it, is more than just a little unique. The name of the video is In My Seat, a pilot story from September 10th and 11th. It's a direct reference to the man who was physically in Steve's seat on that morning on 9/11. It was this man, a man by the name of Tom McGinnis. Now, Tom had more seniority than Steve did, and the way pilots work, if they actually need to go somewhere, well, instead of paying out of pocket, they'll say, "No, I want that route. I'll just fly the plane there, and I'll get there where I want." And that's what happened on this day, on September 10th, that Sunday night. Steve found out that he had been bumped from American Airlines Flight 11, which was going from Boston to L.A., which, if you know anything about that morning, that was the first plane that hit the Trade Center. In the video, Steve talks about that, sure, he had and still does have guilt about he could have been that person in that seat and died along with the others on that plane, but it was Tom instead. And so in the video, Steve talks about that a few years prior to 9/11, he had written down a life objective, is how he called it. And he talked about this in the video, and he said he had written down, as part of that life objective, to seek, trust, and glorify God through humble service and continual prayer, to raise up qualified disciples as quickly as possible. And he said, and then he continued on, and it said, so someday I might hear God say, well done, my good and faithful servant. I think that's a wonderful life objective. And he said that the events of September 11th took that objective, and the word he used was, it intensified it. He realized that he, in essence, in his mind, was given a second life. And it just made him work towards his life objective that much harder. And so, now you and I are probably never going to be in a situation where we narrowly escape death. Maybe a car accident we avoid or something might be something along those lines. But I delivered this lesson so that we could see how important it is for all of us to intensify our lives towards working to be able to hear the Lord tell us, well done, good and faithful servant. We all should be striving towards that. But then there was one more point from that video that I want to address as we do close. And his closing statement was not what I was expecting, because most of it was about the day and then his life objective. But he said, and I did write this down. He says, I've got to live my days with a sense of urgency. I have to make sure I get the most out of it, and I do not mean get the most for me. I think we live in a world where everybody's kind of out to get the most for them. This is not about me. This is about the distinct privilege I have been given to know that someone died in my place. What I know is that someone died in my place not once, but twice. That's where God comes into the whole thing for me. See, Tom sat in the seat that I was qualified to sit in, and by all rights, that was my seat that day. I should have been in that seat. In fact, I've sat in the very seat of that airplane that Tom was in. I've flown all the 757s and 767s American Airlines owns, so I know what it's like to literally sit in that seat. But I am still, all these years later, qualified to sit in that seat, and I could have. But Tom didn't die for my sins. You see, God sent his own son to die for my sins. Jesus Christ was the other one who died in my place, and he hung, and he bled, and he suffered on a cross to pay a price for me that I was unqualified to pay. I couldn't have hung on the cross. I didn't have the same qualifications. One guy sat in a seat that I should have sat in. The other hung and bled on a cross. One is far more significant than the other. That's not to trivialize what happened to Tom. It's to elevate and glorify what God did for me and for mankind on the cross. Steve's circumstances here are very unique. But what Steve said there, especially talking about what Jesus did for us, that applies to every single person here in this room today. He died for you. He died for me. He died for all of us. He paid a price that Steve couldn't pay, I couldn't pay, Mike couldn't pay, none of us could pay. He bled and he suffered, and through that, we have a chance to be forgiven for the sins that we do commit, and we have the hope of an eternal life in the joy of the Master. On that cross, Jesus took your seat. He took your punishment. He paid a price for us. So this morning, you have the opportunity and the privilege to intensify your life and live for him. You have the chance to strive and to work and do what needs to be done to be called a good and faithful servant. So here's my question for you this morning. Will you live with the same urgency that Steve has dedicated his life towards? Now, that video was 15 years ago, and I've heard him since talk about he used to be a pastor and things like that. I don't think Steve has unintensified his life. If anything, it's just gotten fiery and fierier. And we should be living the same way. We need to be making sure that we get the most out of our days, not the things that we can accumulate or be rewarded for, but we need to be getting out so we can continue to be good and faithful. And we need to be striving every day to do what we have to do to hear those words, good and faithful servant. If you've never obeyed the gospel, today is the day to do so, because tomorrow is not guaranteed. Next hour is not guaranteed. And you have the opportunity to come forward. You can believe in him. You can confess that you believe that Jesus is the Son of God and that he came and died for us. You can tell us that you are choosing to turn from your life of sin, and you can be baptized into Christ for the forgiveness of those sins. If you're already a Christian, but you know your life is not maybe been as faithful or as good as it should have been, today is the day to recommit. Today is to let us know if we can help you with that. If you have the desire for prayers on your behalf, we can certainly do so, and we can help you to try to renew your heart and give you the strength to live as good and as faithful a life as is possible. So Jesus died for you. Now he's calling you to live for him. If you need to respond to the invitation, whether to obey the gospel or just request the prayers of the congregation, we ask you to come now as we stand and as we sing.